Sister, woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister, woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving and you've forgotten
how? Hi, I'm Irene Yarrow, and this is Every Woman's Space.
Woman, sister, did they take away your child and they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild?
As many of you know by now, this is a program by, for, and about women, well-known and not known, of different racial and ethnic groups, of all classes and all ages. And this is a program where one of the most important things is communication between me and the guests that I have on the show and between us and you, the listeners out there. I always ask for letters. I always forget to give the address. The address is 359 East 62nd Street, and I'll give it again later. We usually take phone calls, and today we will be taking phone calls later on. I want to talk a little bit tonight about some letters that I got. I did a program on the 18th, which is 3 weeks ago, I think, called Lesbian Away, come out, whoever you are. And it was a show where many women spoke of their experiences in coming out as lesbians. There were songs and stories and personal testimony. And I had a lot of letters following that show from women who got a lot out of listening to it and yet don't know how to reach the gay community. I gave the number of the lesbian switchboard, but some women found that they did not weren't able to call the switchboard during the hours that they were open. And there was enough need, I think, that I want to give a little more information over again. First of all, the lesbian switchboard is going to be having longer hours in the fall. Right now, it's only open from 6 to 9, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. However, in the fall, it's going to be open from 2 to 6 and 6 to 9, with two different shifts of women who are not therapists, who are just women who give freely of their time and sit there and take phone calls from any women who need to talk about anything, from information, what's going on this weekend, to, I'm not sure what my sexual identity is, and I need to talk to somebody. The number of lesbian switchboard is 741-2610. They also gather names together, and when there are enough names, they organize CR groups, consciousness-raising groups, and specifically coming-out groups for women who have been straight and who think that they might be gay. Another suggestion is an organization called Identity House. This is an organization where people are trained to become peer counselors, which again is not the same as therapists, because they just have a little bit of training enough so that they can help other people. And people come to them who have questions about their sexual identity. They're there to serve lesbians, bisexuals, and gay men. And Identity House is open from 6 to 10 p.m., Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday nights, when they have a walk-in service, and all you have to do is go there and walk in, and there's always a woman and a man counselor waiting to talk to you. There is very low fee charged for the service. Their phone number is 243-8181, and they're located at 544 6th Avenue in Manhattan, which is between 14th and 15th Streets. On Saturday afternoons from 2:30 to 5, they have a group of women who get together and talk, women, most of whom have never been there before, and they just get together and talk about anything, any problems that they have with their sexual identities. And they're very, very good people, too. I personally had a lot of very, very, very positive experience with coming out groups and consciousness-raising groups. And I would suggest that for anybody who has a need to get together with other women to talk about any kinds of issues relating to either feminism or lesbianism. And sometimes you hear about that and you wish you were in one, but you don't know how to find one. There are various ways. One way is to call the lesbian switchboard, and they'll take your name, and someone will get in touch with you when a group is being formed. Another way would be to write to me here at the station and give me your phone number or address, and I'll give your name an address to someone I know who's organizing groups this fall, who's very interested in seeing the tradition of consciousness raising, which is one of the most important things of the women's movement, continue. Because after a few years, the consciousness raising groups started to slow down, and we're all feeling that they're very necessary still. So you can think about all of those things. Also, I want to mention that on Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock, on alternate Tuesdays, there's a show called The Lesbian Spectacular with a Cast of Millions. And this show is on alternate Tuesdays. The next one is a week from this coming Tuesday on the 17th. But, again, starting in September, it will be on every Tuesday night at 11. And these are just some of the options that I want to tell you about in terms of getting in touch with other women. Another thing about letters that I want to talk about is that I've gotten a lot of mail, and I love getting it. And it talks about all different kinds of things. But one of the things that it talks about a lot is my position on not taking phone calls from men. So I would like to, right now, because we are going to be taking calls at the end of the show, state my position again, and at the same time, invite anyone to write me. And at some point in the near future, I'm planning to do a show which will be mostly telephone calls, where we can talk about any issues that I and that you feel are really important to talk about, because on this show we never have enough phone time. But anyway, this is my position. This show is called Every Woman's Space. It's a space where women can be together and exchange ideas and ask each other questions and get a lot of feedback from each other. In this time of 1 hour and the phone call time, which is usually 20 minutes or less, I don't want to spend any time taking phone calls from men. And what I want to say to some of the men who've written to me and say, but I'm an exception, I'm a feminist man and I have a feminist consciousness, I want to say that's really great. But if you do have a consciousness of the seriousness of the oppression of women, then you will respect our need for this kind of a space and not call at this time. You are, however, absolutely welcome to write letters, and I really enjoy getting them and reading them. And when I have time, which I haven't had much of, I'll probably answer some. I'll probably be answering a lot more of my mail than I've had time to do so far. So, once again, the address here is Irene Yarrow, care of WBAI, 359 East 62nd Street, New York, New York, 10021. And in reference to calls from men, again, we won't be taking them. And so if you call later, men, when we're taking calls from women, I'm simply going to say thank you for calling. We'll go on to the next call. So don't waste your time and hours, please. Okay. Now we can get to the program proper. This is the second show of the Women Writing Series. With me is Jan Clausen. Jan's book of poems, After Touch, was published by Out and Out Books in 1975. It is obtainable in various bookstores here in New York, and I'll be giving the name of the bookstores and the address of the publisher later on in the program. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Anne.
I'm sorry I took so long getting to you.
But anyway, all right.
Welcome to Every Woman's Space. And what kinds of things would you like to tell the audience about yourself?
Well, just a few things, I guess. I've been writing for about 10 years, but I was a very closeted writer in the beginning, and it took me a long time to even be able to admit to other people that I wanted to think of myself as a writer, which is an experience that I think a lot of women who write have had to struggle with.
I agree with that.
And also, another thing I've had to struggle with is that I have, a lot of times I haven't had very much time for writing because I've been supporting myself doing a variety of things. Sometimes I think that I've done most of the kinds of service jobs that are supposed to be traditional for women. I've been a nurse's aide, I've worked in an office, I've been a waitress, and a number of things like that. Right now I happen to be unemployed, which is not so good in terms of money, but it's very good in terms of the fact that I'm getting to do some writing.
Some writing time.
Right. Oh, and another thing is that I'm from Oregon. I came to New York about 3 years ago, and I still identify as an Oregonian very heavily.
Oh, that's funny, because when I met you, I just put you in the line of people who look like a New Yorker and talk like a New Yorker. I think you've gotten very assimilated, actually.
But I think that's a compliment.
It is?
Good.
Now that I think about it, though, I can see you as an Oregonian. Jan is going to read a short story called The Warsaw Ghetto, and I think it would be good to do it right now.
Okay, good. The Warsaw Ghetto. Wearing her long blue bathrobe, Mother ascends that hill. Sirens, soldiers, dogs barking closer, etc. Face ravaged beyond hope, but that you knew already, it's part of the setup. Bundle in her arm, she holds out to me, blanket soft child, like a plastic explosive. I want no part of this, not even in dreams. Wake up, 6 o'clock, black square of window just turning gray. Lori breathing, arm blue-veined on my pillow. Trapped between wall and her beautiful muscled back, I doze, dodging nightmare. Kim kinetic rises, new created each morning. Channel change or click, other side of wall, television sound always through this life. Wailing, finger hurts, wants breakfast, etc., etc. Wait, says Lori. Childhood, what was it, always waiting for the grown-ups to get up? But just as Lori moves her hand cool over 8 o'clock my shoulder, just as with a light pressure, clench, and relaxation of muscles she calls me, just as I start to go under, Kim starts crying. Mommy, 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 the cat scratched me. Jesus, fuck, scream, God, I'm not even her mother, but get that kid noise out of my hair, but no. Patience. It's hard being anybody, a child, to remember. Honey, I'll go this time. Back in bed, safe with her hair, her warmth, her cunt wet, the fact that she loves me, I touch, gentle, but later knead the flesh not like dough, it swells, tough, resilient, under my hand. Morning efficient, clandestine, wanting it fiercely. Later, cloudy as though through ether, I see her bent, serious as a midwife over me, I struggle, gasp, grapple with this thing. Boundaries of skin vague, we always fit better after. Phone rings, Kim comes charging, shouting, I'll get it, vaults over disordered limbs. Hello, this is Kimberly Wilson speaking, may I ask who's calling? Lapsing into vernacular, oh, hi, Grandma. She gets that bullshit from her Sunday daddy, answers like the girls do at his office. Daylight in the swamps, I intone like Father always did Saturday mornings, and rise, shower. Kim crouches on the toilet asking questions. Know me, am I Jewish? No, you and Lori aren't Jewish. Why? Because your relatives aren't Jewish. They're Irish, German, Dutch. Is that what you are too? No, I'm Jewish. Do you say Jewish pears? Do I what? Do you say Jewish pears? Like when you close your eyes and say pears to Jesus. Breakfast. Restaurant terribly crowded and we get the mean old waitress. Don't call her that, Kim. It's oppressive, I admonish, but she is anyway. Platinum hair wrenched back to a barrette rivet sagging mask-like features to skeletal structure. Lumps of fat jiggle on arms as she slams down coffee slopped in saucers in the wrong order. Possible hangover, probable righteous indignation as oppressed woman holding down a shit job, but also obvious contempt for two women, no men, a child, than which there is no social grouping more déclassé. I, child of Bronx, am calloused, but Lori, raised on Long Island, objects to engaging in breakfast-time struggle. Withhold tip, I propose. Intense theoretical discussion on issue of white working class follows. Kim suddenly demands bathroom, threatens to pee on floor. Two women, blue hair, hairnets, opposite booth, frown, raise eyebrows, murmur, poor little boy, his coat is torn. Kim off to bathroom. Tip. Scowl at women. Pay bill. Drive into town. Kim leaning over back seat, kvetching into my ear, Lori yelling. Kim, shut up, you're giving me a headache, finally I explode. Mommy, Nomi wasn't nice to me. She said something that wasn't nice. Told me to shut up. My teacher says it isn't nice to say shut up. Predictably, she howls. Right on, I say. Thank the goddess I don't live by your teacher's tight-ass kindergarten standards of nicety. Meanwhile, high we fly over Brooklyn Bridge, water, toward towers of Manhattan, thrust this morning into unnaturally clear air. Whatever would we have done with you in the Warsaw Ghetto, I groan. What's a Warsaw Ghetto? Kim stops bawling long enough to inquire. Kim, Laurie conclude separate piece, stroll through sporting goods store holding hands. Kim pretends to ignore me, but if thoughts could kill, I'd keel over like a poisoned cockroach. Bad vibes, expedition a failure, no suitable tents. Laurie drops me off at train station. We embrace, public, perfunctory, grim. Goodbye, Kim, I say, trying to look dignified, indifferent. Kim clamps hands over ears. Take train back to Brooklyn, read life in the iron mills. Train stalls in tunnel 15 minutes underwater between two boroughs. Shopping bag lady in next car expressing hysteria others keep to themselves, jumps up shouting, hurry train, hurry train, hurry train, hurry. Stop on way home from station, pick up cheese, yogurt, bean curd, vegetables. Arrive home, find mail consists one final disconnect notice from gas company. Living room piled with a week's worth of Times posts, Kim's train set, one hideous Charm and Charlotte doll drafts of Laurie's last article, clothes, clean and dirty. Ignore objective conditions of existence. Landlord drops by. Put on extra shirt when I see him coming so he won't notice my breasts. Hassle about bathroom plumbing. He won't fix, wants us to pay. Well, I don't know how soon we can have it taken care of, and it's flooding downstairs, I mention, polite, tough, coping, thinking which judo move I'd lay him out with if he tried anything. Do a wash. Mop up overflow. Put wash in dryer, wash dishes, clean sink, punish cats for shitting behind couch, clean up shit, eat lunch, walk to park. Spring. Forsythia. Fever, that spurious weekend freedom, signs new stenciled on mailboxes say fight for socialism, liberated fathers in droves wheel babies through park, cop car lurks by lake, kids tear flowers off trees, in April park changes like a clock hand moving imperceptibly day by day, trapped in offices under fluorescent lighting we don't see it. Think about scene with Kim. So angry I was this morning, and I don't even get credit for being the mother. You acted like a baby, I could say, vindictive, but it would be inaccurate. It's a highly sophisticated technique she's developed, really. Good thing about kids, you learn self-sacrifice, become a better person, mother said. I never wanted a child, but I had an abortion when I was 17, and there are no accidents. Family affair, doctor, colleague of my father's, safe, sterile, almost painless, very hush-hush. They might have left me to back-alley butchers, they might have made me give it up, I might have had stretch marks. Dumb luck that I didn't. They made me feel it. But the process, the fetus growing in me, the mother, that part never seemed tangible any more than adulthood, years, their passage, the fact of death. Because actually, you can't choose to have kids. They are all necessary, or seem so at the time. Women not knowing how to prevent it, or conned into thinking it's what they want to do. Men doing the convincing, rendering us irrevocably dumb, female-chained, is how I saw it. My birth, for example, makes no sense. I always felt my mother ought to have known better. For somewhere outside my childhood, dressed in sober but well-tailored clothing of the period, revealing her lovely figure, my mother stands on the prow of a ship that steams past the Statue of Liberty. Escape from war-torn Europe is the drama. There is nothing tired, poor, or wretched about her. She'll learn to speak classier English than my father, who kept his Bronx accent. Always they steam and steam past. Of course, it didn't look like that, and I wasn't there. Half her family died anonymously in Europe, but she came here and after the war married my father. In 48, I was born, proving nothing had been learned. When I was 16, my favorite song was Masters of War, the line about fear to bring children into the world. They live in Florida now, and I'm reading Simone de Beauvoir and The Coming of Fascism. How all the left refused to believe, see, denied it, but it happened anyway, like death and taxes. Back home, I sit at my desk, fidget, jot down worthless lines of poetry, decide to cook dinner. 6 o'clock news says Kissinger, like a manipulative parent, warning Cuba, stay out of Africa. Who asked him anyway? I'm missing Lori. After dark, they come. I'm chopping salad, vegetables, rice, cooking. Lori holds me tired. She says she's going to lie down. Kim, oblivious of the morning's horrors, stays behind, wants to help. Suggest she come to store with me, get salad oil. Tell her she can give the money herself. She runs, eager for the adult experience of paying for something to get her coat. Nomi, when I grow up, how will I get money? Her hand in mine. This is what I was talking about, not wanting, being a grown-up, socializing children, explaining capitalism. Kids aren't friends, peers, and the whole process of molding, deciding how things should be is not what I like, finally. You have to be too careful of your power. I don't know, Kim, I answer, hoping to laugh it off. Maybe after the revolution you'll do meaningful labor. There are lots of ways for people to earn money, I add optimistically. Some places you don't need money to live. People just make what they need and trade with each other. I'm not even sure that's anthropologically sound, but I'd like it to be. I'd like to be able to help her imagine it. Waiting in line, watching her pointy face, little under the floppy hat, I try to fix it in my mind, thinking in 10 years, when she's 15, what will she be? What will I remember? Knowing still our lives aren't made that way. 10 years, and I could be anywhere. The world could not be. It's what we live with. The man tells me how much for the salad oil. I give the money to Kim. She stretches up, hands it to him. Oh, hi there, little fellow, he says, adding jovial, so long, Mom, to me, beaming self-satisfaction, getting it all wrong. Nomi, why did he call me a little fellow? That's a boy, she asks me, expecting answers. For the same reason he called me a mom, because he doesn't know beans, I say. And she laughs, squeezes my hand. In solidarity we march, sisters in struggle, back up the block. The hall is dark. I fill her plate, leave her to TV's tender mercies, go tell Lori dinner. Kim in her room, we at table discuss Lori's great neck afternoon with folks. So many things I didn't understand about my family, families, before I had Kim, she says. Think I should try it, I say. It could be a new kind of therapy. Have a child and come to terms with your past. But we've been doing it so long, you don't seem to get pregnant, Lori says. Maybe we're not doing it right, I say. Ever thought of parthenogenesis? Asks Lori, kissing me across the table. Two little lovebirds sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes Nomi with a baby carriage. Chants Kim, pirouetting into our midst in startling drag, her pink ballerina tutu. See this tutu, Nomi? I'm going to show it to my daddy tomorrow. He says I can be a ballerina when I grow up. But somehow the pirouettes keep turning into leaps, jumps, sprints, miss their intended effect. I learned that rhyme in grade school myself. The boys peeked under the girls' skirts when they climbed on the monkey bars. Kim wears pants to school now. You've come a long way, baby, they say. Completing bedtime ritual, we carry Kim to bed. Lori, exhausted, watches TV, turns in early. I stay up late, write letters, climb into bed to find her out cold, but warm in sleep she turns to me. Over and over I come back to this, like playing that Billie Holiday song, they can't take that away from me, this body, love, safety, all of it. They can't, in whatever universe, take away that it was, I believe, wondering, is that enough? Wondering, in 50 years, will we look back on this from the wisdom, clarity of the lesbian old age home, having made it all the way to home base, death in bed? In 50 years, will we look?
Thank you. That was really beautiful. There's so many things we could talk about that story. I think one of the most interesting things to me is the question is that an autobiographical story?
Well, the answer is yes and no. as you can tell from the fact that I already said I'm from Oregon, parts of it are not.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, I'm not Jewish. So that whole theme in there is something that's sort of imported. But a lot of the details of everyday life and the situation are very autobiographical. In fact, I do live with my lover and her 6-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, the story is sort of a hybrid, I would say.
Well, I want to ask you how you feel about autobiographical writing. But before I do that, why did you import the parts that weren't autobiographical?
Well, I think I wanted to deal with a theme that I feel like is very present in my life, but I wanted to deal with it in a little different way than it actually happened in my life. I mean, I think growing up when I did and going to school in the 50s and grade school and stuff, I had a very precarious sense of my place in the world. I mean, it was at the time when fallout shelters were being constructed,
mm-hmm.
and air raid drills were going on and so on. And there was sort of a feeling that you didn't know what would happen next. And
uh-huh.
in this particular story, I chose to make that concrete in the sense of imagining how someone would feel who had that
mm-hmm.
in her background.
I see.
In terms of the war in Europe.
Uh-huh. I see. It made it kind of more real. If you had come from that place, if your mother had been someone who had been in the Warsaw Ghetto, etc.
Right. I also have a friend who had... who did have an experience somewhat similar to what I describe in the story, and I think that I've been very impressed by
mm-hmm.
that, and that it affected
mm-hmm.
what I put into the story.
How do you feel about autobiographical writing in general? There are so many different opinions on it.
I feel like it's something that I've had to struggle with in my own writing, particularly in terms of prose writing. I feel like there's a tradition in poetry of the poet speaking in her own voice,
mm-hmm.
and somehow it seems legitimate to speak from one's own experience in poetry. Although I know that some people who've been to graduate school and stuff have felt that they weren't allowed to do that there. But in terms of prose, I think I've had a feeling that comes partly from the literature that I've read all my life and the way that it was presented to me in school, the novels and so on, that there's something better about being able to write a story that's removed from one's own experience in some way, you know, that to write in the third person is better somehow than in the first person. But I find it very hard to write that way.
But if we examine that, why would it be better to do that? Why would something that was removed from one be more valid or important in any way than something that one had experienced personally and therefore had so much deeper an understanding of?
Well, I think, for one thing, I think that probably most writers that we study as great writers in school and stuff, that their writing does come from their experience in more ways than we're led to realize, but it's made to seem more objective sometimes by the fact that it is in the third person. But also, I think there's this myth that there's a separation between, that somehow if you write very personally, it's not universal. Whereas I think exactly the opposite is true, that you have to seize on the most particular things from your own experience in a way, and that those often turn out to be the very things that other people can identify with.
That's almost the same as the maxim that the personal is the most political that can be.
Right.
The personal is the universal. When you said myth, I also was thinking of another thing, which is, I wonder if the idea of writers writing in a way that supposedly is not autobiographical, but objective, is to perpetuate the separation between the artist and the consumer of art. In other words, to set the writer up as someone superior to the person who just reads the writing. Whereas when you write personally and autobiographically, you're coming so much closer to your reader, you're opening yourself up, and it seems to me, this just occurred to me, that would cut through some of that hierarchical kind of thing that exists. What do you think
right.
about that?
I think that's true. And I think that as writers, sometimes we would like to believe that we have access to some kind of truth or insight that people ordinarily don't have in their everyday lives, but I guess that I really feel like that's not true.
I think so, too. I think that what writers have is an interest in, and I guess an ability to, but mostly an interest in talking about and expressing the truths that we see in our lives and in the world around us. But it isn't that we're the only ones that have the perceptions at all. We're just the ones who write them down.
Right. I feel that that's very true.
And I think it's also a part of the whole patriarchal setup, because just as in roles, men are those who keep their emotions under control. Not their emotion of anger, that one they let out, but their emotions of sadness, for example, and of deep feeling, men keep those very much under wraps, whereas women are known to be more emotional. And therefore, men, all those great novelists, all that literature that you read in school that you referred to, we weren't supposed to know that that was autobiographical, because then we would know that people like Hemingway, for example, had these really deep feelings, and we're not supposed to know that, because they're supposed to be masculine and therefore in control of their feelings.
Right. I think that's true. There's also another problem with autobiographical writing, though, and that's that it sort of raises the specter that one might be using emotions and using other people's experience in a way that's not fair to those people. And